It's 11 o'clock, and this is KOIN in Portland.
CBS News. Three gunmen continue to hold their hostages inside a London restaurant. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. He has been hurt in the incident involving gunmen who were caught in a robbery attempt just as the Spaghetti House restaurant was closing. Bob Dyke is at the scene.
Dawn is breaking here in London. The situation is unchanged. It's been 5 hours since the drama began. The three armed robbery suspects and their eight hostages are still barricaded in the basement storeroom of an Italian restaurant not far from Hyde Park. Police and the gunmen have apparently been speaking to each other through the closed storeroom door. Police say the hostages, employees of the restaurant, seem unharmed. The gunmen reportedly have demanded to see an as yet unidentified government official. And another report says the gunmen want a getaway car. Meanwhile, police continue to surround the restaurant and ambulances are standing by. Bob Dyke for CBS News, Knightsbridge, West London.
The latest on the price of gasoline in a minute.
My name is Paul Shore. I'm a mortarman at Fort Ord, California, and I'm starting my college degree at the University of Maryland. I'm in the new Army educational program called Project Ahead, which lets me earn college credits while I'm in the Army, with the Army paying up to 75% of my tuition. I keep in touch with the University of Maryland through my Project Ahead advisor. This way I know which courses I should take for the credits I need. There are hundreds of schools across the United States that are now part of Project Ahead. And when my enlistment's up, I'll be able to finish college full-time with my GI benefits. It's probably the best program that the Army's come up with.
Contact your Army representative for complete details or call toll-free 800-523-5000 and ask about Project Ahead.
The Israeli cabinet has announced a series of sweeping belt-tightening measures to try to reduce the balance of payments deficit. The plan includes a 10% devaluation of the Israeli pound, new taxes, and a 22% increase in the price of gasoline. Gasoline prices are expected to go up in the United States about 1 cent a gallon this coming Wednesday as a result of OPEC's raising the price of its oil 10%. Federal Energy Chief Frank Zarb says the price of gas will keep going up, too, unless Congress adopts an overall energy policy that raises domestic oil prices, forcing consumers to cut dependence on all oil. President Ford has called the price hike by OPEC regrettable, but Iran's oil minister, Jamshid Amuzegar, sees it a different way.
If you were in our shoes, what would you have done? All we are saying is, if we give, in a very simple language, if we give one barrel of oil for one bushel of wheat, we want that proportion to stay the same. We don't want to be placed in a position that we have to give three barrels of oil for the same bushel of wheat.
Iran's oil minister Amuzegar in Vienna, where OPEC countries wound up their meeting on Saturday night. In the Philippines, Muslim rebels who have been holding a Japanese freighter and its 26 crew members hostage since Friday have apparently dropped their ransom demand of $133,000 and have now agreed to release the ship and hostages in exchange for a safe flight. Japanese sources in Manila say the agreement is scheduled to take effect an hour from now. More news coming up.
This man has had one of the most varied careers of any CBS News correspondent.
The committee members will have some more specific questions to ask today, but already they've heard of...
CBS News' George Herman has been into almost every news job possible. He's been a writer, editor, cameraman, and war correspondent. He's covered the White House, been a bureau chief, and is currently enjoying his favorite assignment as Washington correspondent. Along the way, he met and married Patricia Kerwin, a former White House staffer for President Eisenhower, and they have three sons. Herman has also clocked many miles on the political trails, covering such presidential candidacies as Adlai Stevenson, Lyndon Johnson, Hubert Humphrey, and Edmund Muskie. He was also the first radio newsman to file a report on the Watergate break-in. As you can see, Herman's professional background makes him the perfect choice to moderate one of CBS News' outstanding weekly broadcasts, Face the Nation. Listen for George Herman from Washington on most of these CBS radio network stations.
The Susquehanna River is expected to crest in a few hours in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but flood forecasters say the retaining walls that have been built around the Capitol should hold back the water. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, escaped flooding on Saturday, but other areas are still underwater. 8 people have been killed in the 5 days of torrential rains, which were the remnants of Hurricane Eloise. President Ford has told officials in 21 counties that they are eligible for federal disaster relief. Police resume a search on Sunday morning about 25 miles north of Detroit in a plot of wooded land for the body of former Teamsters President James Hoffa. A tipster with alleged mafia Teamster connections has told the Senate Permanent Investigation Subcommittee that Hoffa's body was located there. The Congressional Black Caucus gave awards of merit Saturday night to former heavyweight boxing champion Joe Lewis and athlete-turned-actor Paul Robeson. Other people receiving awards included Lieutenant Governors George Brown of Colorado and Mervyn Donnelly of California. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
In local news tonight, Senators Mark Hatfield and Bob Packwood have co-sponsored legislation to terminate Lake Oswego's status as a navigable waterway. Hatfield says the Corps of Engineers in 1972 made the designation despite the lake having no navigable access by watercraft or to or from any such waterway. He says the action was taken without field studies and, in these words, without apparently much justification. The senator says both the Corps of Portland District Office, rather, in North Pacific Division, have recommended the designation be removed from the lake that was constructed in the 1850s as a reservoir to provide water to operate a sawmill. They may be holding news conferences within 1 hour of each other, but Vice President Nelson Rockefeller and former California Governor Ronald Reagan are not expected to meet in Portland this next week. Both are scheduled to address the Western States Republican Conference to be held Thursday through Saturday. Reagan mentioned as a possible presidential or vice presidential candidate will give a keynote luncheon address Friday. Rockefeller will speak at a banquet later that day. The conference is expected to attract between 300 and 400 delegates from 15 western states. A team from Marion County is to travel to the north slopes of Mount Jefferson today to remove the body of Arthur Allen Coleman of Salem. His body was found yesterday by 4 Oregon College of Education students in a 30-foot crevasse about the 7,000-foot elevation. He had been missing since early September 20th when he apparently left his campground to go climb. A $1,000 reward had been offered for information leading to his return by a group of friends of the State Employment Division employee. Weather forecast calls for low clouds Sunday with partial afternoon clearing. Sunday, Monday, after brief morning fog or low clouds. No chance of rain through Sunday night. That's Radio 97 News till 8 minutes past 11 o'clock.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. In the assessment of criminality, the basic criterion, of course, must be volume. After all, Attila the Hun was a greater transgressor than, say, Jack the Ripper. Therefore, what does history tell us? We see that for those who kill more or less at retail, we have our local police. For those who murder at wholesale, the Attilas, the Hitlers, and the like, we must have our philosophers, men who will inspire us to stand up and fight. And such a fighting philosopher was Thomas Jefferson.
Now, Mr. Jefferson, there's no need getting excited.
Sheriff, they're going out there to commit cold-blooded murder.
That can't be proved.
They intend to kill him.
But there's nothing I can do about it.
You swore to uphold the law.
Well, not exactly. What I swore was to uphold the law to the best of my ability. And this... well, this just happens to be the best I can do.
Well, someone has to stop them.
I don't have the authority to keep men from riding through the woods.
Even if their purpose is to kill an innocent man?
But I don't know that.
I do. And if you won't stop them, I will.
Now, Mr. Jefferson, it could be dangerous.
Somebody has to enforce the law, Sheriff. And it looks as if it'll have to be me. Me alone. All by myself.
Our mystery drama, The Thomas Jefferson Defense, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Paul Hecht. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division.
I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buick's 1976 Century Regal is the most luxurious midsize car Buick builds. But it's also got a practical side. In fact, it makes a concession to practicality that no other American midsize car does. It comes with a V6 engine, and a Buick V6 at that. Regal, it's got the spirit.
America has so much to overcome. Hard, concrete problems that only knowledge can resolve. Will you help us overcome them by giving to America at the very source of her future? Give to the college of your choice now.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
For hundreds of years, alcoholic men and women have been scolded, denounced, beaten, lashed, pilloried, dunked, jailed, and, of course, threatened with eternal damnation. There is no evidence that any of these treatments ever resulted in a single cure. Why not? Simply because alcoholism is not a crime. It is not a moral weakness. It is an illness that can be treated successfully. What's more, alcoholism can often be prevented before it develops if we learn to recognize the early signs of drinking problems. After all these years, there ought to be better ways to treat alcoholism than punishing the alcoholic person. And, of course, there are. For information or help, write Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland.
This message is a public service by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Year 1775. The fuse of defiance has already been lighted. It is now hissing and sputtering inexorably toward the powder keg of rebellion. Thomas Jefferson has just returned from the Virginia Constitutional Convention, held at St. John's Church in Richmond, where he has heard the impassioned demand of Patrick Henry, "Give me liberty or give me death." The speech has touched his heart and inflamed his soul. And yet, he has feelings of uneasiness and guilt. All around him, he hears outcries for freedom, justice, equality. And yet, he knows that these fervent demands are not being made for everybody. There are those human beings who will have neither equality nor equity in the brave new world that is soon to be born. As a matter of fact, because of their skin color, they are not considered to be human beings at all.
Good evening, Carter.
Good evening, Mr. Jefferson.
Oh, Mr. Jefferson, is it? Whatever became of Tom?
Oh, well, sir.
Oh, is it sir now? This becomes worse.
Well, sir, we're going to have us a new government, ain't we?
We most likely will, if we're not all hanged first.
Now, the way I hear it, we got to get rid of old King George, true?
True.
Well, then we've got to get us a new king.
Why, Carter?
Why are you going to have a country without a king? Who are the people going to obey?
We shall create an equal society.
Oh, it'll never work.
I think you have the wrong idea.
That the king will have to be a Virginian.
Why?
Well, there ain't nobody even worth talking about south of here. Go north. Pennsylvania's all pig farmers. New York's all potato farmers. And I wouldn't trust nobody lives in New England.
Carter, the entire idea is to get rid of king.
You know, you could be king.
Because you're the smartest.
And then we got Mr. Patrick Henry, who's got a powerful mouth. And Colonel Washington looks like a king.
Yeah? Carter, what's wrong? Why are you so pale? Are you ill?
Good evening, Mr. Jefferson.
Oh, welcome, Louisa. Your mother sent word you mightn't come.
Well, I was feeling poorly. But Jeremy Morgan here just happened by and cheered me up. Hasn't he got the nicest smile? I tell you, it's the finest medicine. Mr. Jefferson, may I present Mr. Jeremy Morgan?
Your servant, sir.
Welcome, Mr. Morgan.
And old Scowlface here, Carter McAllister.
You said you'd come here with me tonight, Louisa.
Did I?
You promised.
What's a promise? It's only something you make when you won't give your word of honor.
I won't
have it.
What won't you have,
Carter? I won't have you seen around with every common Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Tread lightly, sir. I caution you.
Who are you to caution
and
me?
And now, gentlemen, you are both under my roof, and I will not permit things to get out of hand.
Louisa, I'm taking you home.
You just let go of my arm, Carter McCallum.
I believe you heard what the lady said.
You say one more word, and I shall horsewhip you.
Like you horsewhip your slaves?
You impertinent ruffian.
Gentlemen, stop right here, or I may have to thrash the both of you.
Mr. McAllister, you will give me satisfaction.
Satisfaction? You overstep your bounds. Satisfaction is something that only can be exchanged among gentlemen.
And do you pretend to be a gentleman, Mr. McAllister? Your father's a thief who cheats his tenants. How dare you look down on me? My father traces his lineage back to King Henry II.
And your mother, no doubt, traces hers back to Pocahontas.
Why, you...
That's enough. Mr. Morgan, stop that. Now, don't strike him again.
I'm sorry, sir. I should not have lost my temper.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Shut up, Carter. Now, you begged for it.
I'll kill you. I am going to kill you, Jeremy Morgan.
Nobody's going to kill anybody. Walter Fred, help him to the sofa. Get some cloths. Get some vinegar.
Jeremy Morgan, I shall shoot you down like the mongrel dog you are.
Oh, do be quiet, both of you. Mr. Jefferson, may I retire to your sitting room?
Mr. Jefferson, I'm sorry. I had no right to abuse your hospitality. Therefore, if you'll excuse me...
Hey, Mr. Morgan. Jeremy, wait. Now, son, there's no need for you to run off.
I know I'm not welcome.
Oh, that's nonsense. This is my house.
I should never have come.
How can you say that? You're Lord Arthur Morgan's son. Your father was a dear friend of mine.
Was my mother? You see, sir, I forgot my place.
Jeremy, your place in this world is whatever you can win through strength and skill and courage. Every man has the opportunity to prove himself. Every man is free to strive.
You really don't believe that?
I do.
How can you? You own slaves. I'm sorry. I had no right to say that.
It's a difficult, complicated world.
I agree, sir. Especially for me.
You may be somewhat oversensitive. After all, Louisa Henderson did seem quite taken with you.
No. I saw what all that meant the moment we entered the room. I was just an instrument.
An instrument?
With which she could provoke Carter McAllister.
Oh, you're very young and very cynical.
And very right, Mr. Jefferson.
Jeremy, I would like to be your friend.
There's no need to consider my feelings.
I mean that, Jeremy, sincerely. Look at yourself. You've barely grown out of your childhood, and already you've abandoned your hopes.
It would be best if children like me would never be born. A consolation is, we die young.
Oh, now, come on. Come on back in with me, and we shall have some wine.
Usually we die by violence.
I offer you my hand in friendship.
I'm grateful. But there will be violence.
Come back inside. You and Carter McAllister will shake hands.
No.
You, Jeremy, are also to blame. You insulted him, too. Both of you must forgive each other.
That cannot happen.
Now, why do you say that? Aren't you willing to forgive him?
Yes. I am willing to forgive him for his insult. But he will be unable to forgive me for my mother.
Oh, I cannot believe that men of goodwill cannot reconcile their quarrels. Will you let me mediate between you?
If it pleases you, Mr. Jefferson. However, I have decided to leave this part of the country.
But why?
Carter is determined to kill me. I have no wish to kill him first, therefore I must go.
But where will you go?
Back to my own people.
Come in.
Louisa?
Now, Mr. Jefferson, I can tell from that look on your face you're about to scold me.
I'm afraid I must.
Well, suppose I say, whatever it is I did, I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think it was right of you to come here with Jeremy Morgan just so that you could make Carter angry.
Oh, did you see Carter's face?
Louisa, this is a serious business. One of those boys could very well kill the other.
Oh, Carter talks big. He's not the killing kind.
Any man can become a killer where a woman's involved.
You mean somebody would kill for me?
Oh, Louisa, if only you had a heart and a mind and a conscience to go with all that beauty.
Do you want to know the awful truth? I love them both.
Oh, you can't love them both.
When I want to have someone to have fun with, to ride with, to dance with, I love Carter. When I need someone just to be with, to talk with, I love Jeremy.
Louisa, how can you love Jeremy?
Carter McAllister, are you standing there listening at that door? You are not a man of honor.
You belong to me.
I belong to myself.
Louisa, if I can't have you, nobody will.
I'll decide who has me.
Why, that thieving, skulking half-breed.
Carter, I cannot permit you to insult a friend of mine under my roof.
I'll do more than just insult him. I'm going to kill him.
Welcome, my nephew. Welcome.
I have brought you a gift, Blue Cloud.
A robe, a rich robe.
It comes from England, across the seas.
It is a robe of great value. Such color.
One may not fully realize the color by firelight. When the sun rises tomorrow, one's eyes will behold a robe of brilliant scarlet.
The color of blood.
You wonder why I come here, Uncle?
I wait for you to speak.
I have come back.
Back?
To my people.
We are not your people, my son.
You are my mother's people.
Are they unkind to you? The other sons of your father?
No. They treat me well. We are brothers.
Then why do you wish to come here?
Because there is no place, no real place for me in their world.
Why do you say this?
The women mock me. The men make sport of me. Only one sees me as a true friend. Tom Jefferson.
Jefferson?
You have called him Red Hair.
Yes. Yes, I know him. So you wish to live with your mother's people?
Yes.
Because you are afraid.
I want peace.
There is no peace. There can be no peace for your mother's people.
There is no peace for me in my father's village.
You must go back.
Why?
Soon, we shall be driven from here. They want to turn our woods into fields to raise their tobacco. Your mother's people shall be destroyed.
No.
You can lose yourself in the forest and live out your life in peace and safety. But there shall only be misery for your children and death. For your children's children.
What is there that I must do?
Your father's voice was strong in the councils for our people. Your voice must be heard there too. You must make them listen.
Why would they listen to me? By some, I am called a half-breed.
You are strong, young, wise. You were born to make a new understanding between people. It is your destiny.
If I go back, I will surely die.
The day, the hour, the moment of your death has already been cast. And it shall find you wherever you are.
Yes, Blue Cloud, I see now. I must go back. Carter.
Yeah. Carter. Don't take one more step or I'll put a bullet in you.
Well, you've got a weapon. I'm unarmed. No wonder I hear such courage in your voice.
Don't provoke me, Jeremy. I came after you to kill you.
Yes?
It was just before sundown. I saw you going into the woods carrying that bright scarlet robe.
It was a gift for my uncle, Blue Cloud. What do you want now, Carter?
Good, I thought. He sees the light. He's going back to his own people. So I'll let you go.
Thank you.
But I was wrong. You're coming back to town.
No. You were right. I am going back to my own people.
Your people are back there in the woods.
My people are everywhere.
I don't want to kill you. Go back to the woods. Paint your face. Stick a feather in your hair.
Stand aside. I have business in town.
Go back where you belong. I warn you. I'll kill you.
You're not going to kill anybody.
No, stop. Don't make me do it. Stop. I'll shoot. I told you I'd shoot. I told you.
They were very young, very proud, quick to anger. They were barely out of their teens. And now, one of them lies dead, shot in the back by the musket of the other. And it happened on the very eve of the American Revolution. For some of the reasons the revolution came about in the first place. Reasons of pride, uncontrolled passions, and sheer blindness. But the fight that led to this midnight killing began in Tom Jefferson's home. So you can expect to see him again in just a few moments when I shall return with Act Two.
Hi, this is Carol Burnett. Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933 and made life miserable for people in Germany. And that's why the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, was formed. It began by helping refugees from Hitler's Germany and went on to help millions more in World War II. But its work didn't end there because war and oppression didn't end there. You remember the brave Hungarians who stood up to the Russians in 1956? Well, IRC helped many who escaped. And since then, IRC has come to the aid of thousands who have escaped from Cuba, China, East Germany, Russia, or wherever freedom is pretty much of a meaningless word. It also does its work in countries ravaged by war. But IRC needs money for food, clothing, and medical care, to reunite families, to find people jobs, and homes for children without homes. So please, help the people who help. Send your money to this address, International Rescue Committee, Box 16, Times Square Station, New York City, New York, 10036.
I think it was the first time I can remember really going fishing with my dad. I'm sure I'd been with him before, but the first time I really remember it was wading downstream with him in an extra big pair of wading boots as he felt his way very surely along the stream bed and I shakily held onto the willows. And we found a spot where my dad lifted his finger to his lips and said, "Shh, we don't want to scare the fish away." And then I remember that fish, the biggest fish I'd ever seen in my life. And it was on the end of my line. And my dad, boy, was he proud. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Two is company. Three is a crowd. And anytime you have a crowd, look for trouble. When a beautiful girl cannot make up her mind between two handsome young men, something has to give. And in this case, what has been given is the life of Jeremy Morgan. And naturally, the prime suspect is Carter McAllister.
Come in.
You wish to see me, Father?
Shut the door and sit down.
Yes, sir.
I understand Jeremy Morgan has been shot to death.
Oh?
I'll thank you not to play the innocent with me. You know he's been murdered.
Well, how would I know?
Because enough people have told me they heard you swear you would shoot him. Because at any minute the sheriff can knock on my door with a warrant for your arrest.
Well, they can't hang me.
And why not?
Well, because he was only a half-breed.
Unfortunately, his father was the late Lord Morgan. His brothers, Jeff and William, accepted him. He was well-liked.
Oh. Oh, Father, you have to save me.
Fool, did you have to kill him yourself? With all the riffraff hereabouts, couldn't you have hired a man?
Please, Father, please get me out of it. I don't want to hang.
You should have thought of that all long before.
I never wanted Louisa Henderson. The match was your idea. You're the one who needs her father's money. Yes, I killed him, but you also had a hand in it.
Oh, now be quiet. Now tell me everything. The truth now.
Well, I waited for him near the woods. He came along. And He was carrying a red robe. Huh? Like Indians like to wear.
A red robe?
Yeah, brilliant scarlet. Well, I thought he intends to go back to his own people. Therefore? Well, I followed him. He headed toward Blue Cloud's village.
Fool! If he had decided to return to the Indians, why did you have to kill him?
But he didn't return. I saw him go into Blue Cloud's tent. I heard him talk.
About what?
I don't know. I don't understand their stupid language, but they were angry with each other.
How do you know?
Well, I think their voices sounded angry. Well, then, I watched him as he came out of the tent. He wasn't going to stay. He was headed back, so I...
Yes, speak up!
Well, I moved ahead of him and stopped a few miles away, and I said to him, I said, go back to your own people. Stay with them, or I'll kill you. And he didn't believe me, and now everybody knows I killed him.
What everybody knows is a lie. But now you listen to me. You are innocent. You did not shoot Jeremy Morgan.
But Father...
You are a fool. All you can do is get yourself into trouble and then come whimpering to me. You're my son, and I must save you.
Yes, Father.
First off, who saw you heading for the woods?
I passed by Pearson's farm.
Noah Pearson knows me money.
I passed by Louisa Henderson and her mother. She was going out riding.
Very well. You went into the woods.
And then I'll hang.
No, because you didn't shoot Jeremy Morgan.
What?
Now, let me tell you what happened. You wanted to shoot him. You followed him into the woods. You saw him go into Blue Cloud's tent. You heard them fight.
Yeah, but I'm not sure this is what they were actually doing.
Oh, yes, you are.
But...
Your anger had meanwhile cooled, and you knew deep in your heart that you could never kill another human being. You do know that, don't you?
Yes.
And so you headed back for home. Suddenly you heard a shot. You turned around. The angry Blue Cloud had followed Jeremy Morgan and put a bullet into his back. When he saw you, he fled. Do you understand me?
Yes.
Now, how do you know it was Blue Cloud?
How?
It had to be Blue Cloud. He was wearing that robe, that brilliant scarlet robe.
Father, will they believe me?
It's your word against that of an Indian.
But it's
Tell
not...
the story calmly and look every man in the eye as you say it. And of course... They'll believe you. And that's what happened. It's the Indian Blue Cloud.
Just a minute, Edmund McAllister.
Now, Tom, everybody knows how you feel about Indians.
And everybody knows how you feel about him too, Edmund.
This is surely a crime. That Jeremy Morgan was a fine, upstanding young man. And that skulking savage shot him in the back.
Why?
Why? Who can figure what goes on in the mind of a redskin? It isn't as if they were fully human.
Blue Cloud loved his nephew. He had no reason to shoot him.
My son, Carter, heard the whole thing and saw the whole thing.
Your son, Carter, stated clearly in front of witnesses that he had every intention of shooting Jeremy Morgan.
Sir, are you calling my boy a liar?
I'm saying it's a matter of his word against Blue Cloud's.
I warn you, Tom Jefferson... You're getting mighty big around here as a politician, but you can't go around insulting people.
You are a bigoted, ignorant man, and that's the truth. You're too old for me to whip, and that son of yours is the product of your upbringing. And you accuse Blue Cloud of murder?
He was seen to do it.
By whom?
By my son, that's by whom.
Why don't you let him speak for himself? Carter, did you actually see Blue Cloud shoot Jeremy Morgan? Well, did you? Would you be willing to place your hand on the Bible and swear in the name of God that you saw Blue Cloud murder Jeremy? Would you?
Of course he would.
I'm asking him. Would you swear, Carter?
Yes. Yes, I would.
All right. Then come with me to the sheriff.
and swear out a warrant for his arrest.
What arrest? You don't arrest an Indian. He commits a crime, you go out and shoot him.
Hold on, Edmund McAllister.
Oh, you can surely talk, Tom Jefferson. But we have had enough talk. Any of you folk who agree with me, let's go home and get our rifles.
Mr. Jefferson, sir, it's an honor.
Some men are intent on murdering Chief Blue Cloud.
Well, sir, he did kill Jeremy Morgan.
He has been accused of killing Jeremy Morgan.
Well, ain't that the same thing?
Oh, no, Sheriff, you cannot permit murder to take place in this country.
Well, Mr. Jefferson, it ain't murder exactly after all. Blue Cloud's only an Indian.
Any man has a right to be protected by the law.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Now, the McAllisters and all of them, they ain't going to go out there to kill Blue Cloud.
Well, that's not the way I heard it.
Well, you see, as concerned citizens, they're just going to bring him back here for trial.
Uh-huh, I see. And then he'll be shot while resisting arrest.
Now,
or
Mr.
perhaps
Jeff,
while trying to escape. Sheriff, you just can't walk into Blue Cloud's village and murder him.
I ain't saying I agree with it, Mr.
Sheriff,
Jefferson. Why not?
Why not? Do you think his young men will stand idly by?
The answer to that question is yes. Now, you see, Mr. Jefferson, he ain't liked Blue Cloud, that is.
I don't understand.
Well, a young man, they want a fighting chief. Which you gotta admit, now, Blue Cloud ain't.
Still, they can't just sit by and watch.
The thing is being arranged. And nobody's gonna be in the village.
I refuse to believe it.
No, so everybody gets what they want. The tribe gets a new chief, one who would want to go to war.
War? What war? They know what happens when they raid our frontier settlements. They know their retribution.
They'll go to war on our side against the British. So that's what they get. The white folks avenge a murder.
Which hasn't been proved.
Proof, Mr. Jefferson, is usually a matter of satisfaction. And all for just the life of one Indian. All in all, it ain't a bad situation.
I've admired you. I've respected you for many years. But I see now you're unfit to be a sheriff.
I'm doing what everybody else is doing. I'm thinking of me first.
You took an oath to uphold the law. I won't see murder committed.
Well, now, what do y'all suggest?
What I've been suggesting, I suggest that
I have a better suggestion. Why don't you ride out there?
Because I'm not the sheriff.
Yes, you are. Yeah. I hereby swear you in as deputy sheriff.
What? What are you doing?
Well, you now have the authority to uphold the law. If you think a crime is about to be committed, it's your duty to prevent it.
I have no experience.
You got plenty of expense, Mr. Jefferson. I watched you grow up. Everybody knows you was meant for high things. You're going to be an important man in this country. I don't throw everything away for...
For what?
For an Indian.
Sheriff. All right, write down on a piece of paper the fact that I am your duly authorized deputy.
We think in terms of intellect and action. We rarely see both qualities combined in one man. How few are the philosopher warriors in history? And yet, for the most part, the great men of 1776 could think and fight. Well, Thomas Jefferson has thought it over and decided it's worth a battle. Therefore, you should stay exactly where you are, and I shall bring it to you in Act 3 in just a few moments. In case you've forgotten how much fun driving can be, Buick would like to introduce you to Skylark, a small car that's all Buick, with room, comfort, and an engine that no other compact car in America offers, the incredible Buick V6. Skylark, it's free spirit made practical.
I want to do one thing.
James Harris's ambition is to leave his children a family home. He's going to do it because he and others in Scott, Arkansas, have started a housing cooperative with a grant from the Campaign for Human Development.
I mean, I leave him no money. But I can leave him some as they can lay their hands. Say it is mine.
The Campaign for Human Development. The United States Catholic Conference.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. How many yards are in a mile? How big is an acre? What's the difference between troy and avoirdupois weight? How big is a rod and what is a peck? You're not sure? Well, most people share your confusion. But it won't be long before all these units of measure become only a memory, because soon the United States is going metric. You know, the metric system already is used more than most people realize. Cigarettes are advertised as 100 millimeters long. Many people have 35 millimeter cameras. And many canned and packaged goods list weight in both ounces and grams or liters. There'll be plenty of time to get used to the new system. In the meantime, for example, a 12-inch ruler will also show 34 millimeters. And for more information on the metric system, write Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C., 20234. A tip from your Better Business Bureau.
The beginning of the year 1775 sees Thomas Jefferson deeply involved in the pursuit of justice in two separate areas. First, the one you all know about, the struggle for independence from Britain. This is the big picture, the historic picture. But second, there is a small picture. Indeed, a tiny, almost invisible picture. This is the pursuit of justice, not as an ideal, but as a practical matter for a single human being. Those are always the toughest.
Welcome to my lodge, Red Hair.
Chief Blue Cloud, there is no time for ceremonies. You must leave here at once.
For what reason?
Men are coming to kill you.
Why?
For the murder of your sister's son.
It is well known that he was murdered in a cowardly manner by a young man who insulted him.
Yes, well, that is not the way many people will have it. They accuse you.
He was as a son to me.
But there is no time for the right and wrong of it. Men are coming here to do murder. Run from them.
Am I a coward? I run from no one.
One of our greatest poets has said discretion is the better part of valor.
Where may I run?
Deeper into the forest.
They will pursue.
No one knows this wilderness the way you do.
I will not be a hunted animal for the rest of my days. Besides, it is late. They come.
There he is!
Now hold up there.
Now you stand clear of him, Mr. Jefferson.
All of you. Turn around and go back to your home.
Now, see here. Who are you to order?
I have here a piece of paper. I am acting in the capacity of the sheriff.
Ah, now, Mr. Jefferson, the Indian's guilty of a murder.
Who says so?
We have got a witness.
Who is your witness?
My son here, Carter.
You saw Chief Blue Cloud murder Jeremy Morgan. Well, Carter?
Speak the truth, son. Speak the truth.
Yes.
Is he being charged with murder? Well, do you charge him, Carter?
Say yes.
I'm asking, Carter.
Yes.
So that settles that. Now, why don't we just shoot him?
He'll have to shoot me first.
Now, Tom Jefferson...
That's how it is, gentlemen. We will have the law here. You will also have to shoot me. So, Mr. Bennett, Mr. Hayden, Mr. Wolverton, the rest of you, is that what you're willing to do? Shoot me?
Tom, we're entitled to justice.
Justice can only be dispensed in a court of law.
You mean have a trial for an Indian? You know they're only a waste of time.
I intend to enforce the law. Now, how will you gentlemen have it?
Well, there's no real difference. Instead of shooting him now, we can hang him later. And so, you say you followed Mr. Morgan all the way to the Shawnee village?
Yes, sir.
And you saw him enter Blue Cloud's lodge?
Yes, sir.
And you heard them quarrel?
Yes, sir.
And then you saw Mr. Morgan leave the tent, move into the forest, and then you heard a shot?
I did.
Now, describe what you saw.
Well, I turned around, and there was Jeremy Morgan falling down dead, and Chief Blue Cloud was standing over him with a smoking musket.
Are you sure it was Blue Cloud?
Yeah, I'm positive.
How? Why? What makes you so sure?
Because I could see his splendid scarlet robe.
The robe that we found in his lodge?
Yes, sir, the very same.
Your witness, Mr. Jefferson.
Well, not every witness is fortunate to have his own father appointed public prosecutor. I must, however, ask some questions that may not have occurred to him. Why did you follow Mr. Morgan into the woods?
Well...
Isn't it true that you intended to kill him?
Well...
You must answer. Isn't it true that he escorted Miss Louisa Henderson to a party at my house? There, you two got into a fight. Didn't you threaten to shoot him?
Yes, sir.
Good. And when you followed him into the woods, isn't it true that you were carrying a musket?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Did
you intend to kill him? You armed yourself for that purpose, and now, when the deed is done, isn't it true that you are trying to place the blame on Chief Blue Cloud's shoulders?
I object.
Your Honor, let him answer the question.
Go ahead, son. Answer him. Tell him it isn't so.
Without prompting. Isn't it true you want Blue Cloud to hang for your crime?
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him!
Cloud, you are accused of murder. Tell us, are you or are you not guilty?
I am innocent.
Gentlemen, I believe him. Don't lose courage, Blue Cloud. The gods will not permit justice to be mocked.
Red Hair, the gods do not permit justice to be mocked. But they allow it to be tested.
I shall see you in the morning.
Yes, the morning. It shall be my last morning.
You must never give up hope.
I cannot give up what I have never had.
No, we can do more.
Come in, Mr. Jefferson. My father isn't home.
Has he left for the courthouse?
Yes, sir. He likes to go early.
I thought perhaps you might like to walk down there with me.
Well, sir, should we be seen together?
Why not?
Oh, we're opposite sides.
I'm still your friend, Carter. Well, shall we have our stroll?
Yes, sir. I was just leaving.
So, you insist you didn't kill Jeremy.
Please, sir, we've already been through all that.
I know. I also know it's a lie.
Mr. Jefferson, I must ask you to let me alone.
Oh, I'll let you alone. And I'm even sure your conscience will let you alone.
I am not listening to any more you're saying.
Yes, your conscience died a long time ago. And do you know who killed it? You did. You, Carter.
What are you talking about?
A man's conscience is what makes him live a man's life. But you're not a man. You're a creature. You're a pathetic, crawling creature of your father.
Sir, you have no right to insult my father.
No one may be insulted by the truth. You're his creature. You don't think for yourself, act for yourself, live for yourself. Why? Why do you tolerate it?
Because I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I don't know anything. I can't do anything. I'm stupid.
Who says so?
My father. And all I have is the prospect of inheriting his estate when he dies.
You'll have worked for it.
Everybody knows I'm a fool.
That's not true.
Louisa. Why do you think she even looked at me? She knows I'll be rich one day. It's
not true. There's nothing wrong with you.
Oh, please, Mr. Jefferson.
Now, look, you have to stand up to your father. You have to let him know you're a man.
I will. From now on,
no,
I will.
No. You have to stand up to him now. Tell the truth.
But I'll die.
Possibly, but if you don't tell the truth, you'll surely die. What life can be left you, huh? You'll spend the rest of your days even deeper within your father's shadow.
Mr. Jefferson, what do you want me to do?
Take the stand. Tell the truth.
No. I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Well, Mr. Jefferson, you may as well go home and get a good night's sleep. Yeah. Tomorrow, for sure, the trial has to end.
Tomorrow, for sure.
People keep wondering how you managed to keep it going even this long. The jury was ready with its verdict at the end of the first day.
The jury was ready before the trial even started.
Well, it's open and shut. I mean, I wish it wasn't, but it's open and shut.
Yes, yes. Carter follows Jeremy into the woods, sees him enter Blue Cloud's teepee. Hears sounds of a quarrel.
Sees Jeremy leave the teepee, re-enter the woods, and then sees and hears Blue Cloud shooting.
Now, wait, just... He says he heard them quarrel.
You have something, Mr. Jefferson?
You say they quarreled.
Yes, sir.
In which language?
Well, must have been Shawnee.
Do you speak Shawnee?
No, sir.
Do you understand it?
No, sir.
Well, then how do you know they quarreled? Please answer the question.
One need not know the language to know there is a quarrel.
Your Honor, I must insist that the witness answer.
Well, I could tell. You could actually hear the anger in the voices.
Your Honor, Mr. Jefferson clearly has exhausted his resources. He has no more evidence. He keeps going over the same ground.
Mr. Jefferson, have you any more evidence?
Well, Your Honor...
I must ask you then to bring your case to a conclusion.
Your Honor, I do have further evidence.
Then you may bring it here.
Your Honor, I'm sorry, but I cannot bring it here.
Then how may we evaluate it?
We must go to where it exists.
If it exists...
It does exist, but only at night.
I'm afraid I cannot follow, Mr. Jefferson.
Your Honor, the evidence exists at the scene of the crime, and since it cannot be moved from its place, we must attend it there.
Your Honor, this is just another scheme on the part of...
A man's life is at stake.
What do you propose, Mr. Jefferson?
Well, the murder was committed at 10 in the evening. At 10 this evening, I suggest we all assemble at the place where it occurred. Where were you standing, Carter?
Behind this tree.
Uh-huh. Well, would you place yourself there, if you please?
This is absolutely ridiculous.
Carter, how far down the path was Jeremy?
About 25 yards.
Uh-huh. Sheriff, would you pace off 25 yards? Take the prisoner with you.
All right, Mr. Jefferson.
Very well. Your Honor, gentlemen, here is the scene as it existed on the night of the murder. We are all standing in a line with Carter. We all hear a shot. Fire in the air, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
We all turn to look. We see Jeremy fall to the ground. Sheriff, fall to the ground, please. Now, we all see a figure standing there in the darkness. It is not easy to make out the face.
He didn't have to see the face. He recognized the red cloak.
Your Honor, gentlemen of the jury, which one of you has supernatural eyesight? Which one of you would swear on the Holy Bible that the cloak is brilliant scarlet, as Carter testified? Which one of you is possessed of the ability to distinguish color in the dark?
It's a trick, Your Honor.
Carter McAllister lied about the cloak. Therefore, he did not identify Blue Cloud. Therefore, we must now consider his motive.
Don't you ever say a word, boy.
No, I will. I'm tired of lying.
Be quiet.
I killed him. I killed Jeremy Morgan. But God have mercy on my soul.
Your Honor, the defense rests.
Well, they didn't hang him. It was a crime of passion, and our forefathers were men who understood passions. He was sentenced to hard labor and later paroled to join a regiment of Virginia cavalry. His life had a purpose, and his death had a meaning, because he fell during the end of the war in the skirmishing about Yorktown. And the people never forgot him. Or Blue Cloud. the Thomas Jefferson defense. I shall return in a moment.
This is Beverly Sills. Did you know that of all the arts, music is the only one in which a blind person can participate freely in spite of blindness? However, even in music, the blind needs special help in order to stand on an equal footing with the sighted. The Lewis Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians works to promote the interests of the blind in the field of music. The foundation, a national nonprofit organization, urgently needs your financial help. The services of the Lewis Braille Foundation are available to any blind person and provide auditions, evaluations and counseling, scholarship aid, paid engagements for qualified musicians, and transcription of music into Braille. The foundation depends solely on the public for its support. Send your tax-deductible gifts to the Lewis Braille Foundation, 112 East 19th Street, New York, 10003. If you know a musically gifted blind person who needs help, please contact the Lewis Braille Foundation at area code 212-982-7290.
We talk about Jefferson and Washington and Adams and the others usually as gods, at least as supermen. Yet, they were all possessed of the usual human frailties. How difficult it must have been for them to be ahead of the ideas of their times, to lead the fight for freedom among a people who also believed in slavery. It was no simple task. Yet it must be a relief to discover that for all their undisputed greatness, our founding fathers were people so very like ourselves, just as contradictory, just as stubborn, just as unpredictable. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Leon Janney, Russell Horton, Jada Rowland, and Bob Caliban. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
How did you get that little statue to look like, General Grant?
I don't know. I just bought a little statue of a horseman dressed like a Union Army general. And after a while, it began to look like Grant.
What are you telling me?
The truth. And look at the other officers. Now compare them with their pictures on the wall. That's Beauregard. And that's Buell. And Bragg. And Johnson. And Wallace.
That's fantastic. How did you get these made up?
I just bought tin soldiers in Civil War uniforms. And after a while...
Wait a minute. This one here. Who's that?
Oh, that's Major Morrissey, commanding officer of Morrissey's Rifles.
That's uncanny.
What's uncanny?
This tin soldier. It looks exactly like you.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Midnight, this is KOIN in Portland.
CBS News. The worst appears to be past for flood-ravaged parts of the Northeast. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The forecast is mostly sunny and mild today for the area around Pennsylvania, which was hardest hit by floods. That means the second day of clear skies after 5 days of downpours. The Susquehanna River is expected to crest above flood stage this morning in Harrisburg, but forecasters say that retaining walls around the city should hold. Damage estimates come to $85 million for farmland alone. Corn and potato crops are gone. 22,000 people are homeless throughout the state. Governor Milton Schaap says that federal help is a must.
We're at the mercy of the elements, and unfortunately we don't have what I would call an overall governmental program to take care of disasters of this sort, and we certainly should have it, but a state can't do it by itself. But the program I outlined of disaster assistance on an insurance program where people get paid for their losses would relieve the anxiety that so many people here have.
President Ford has declared that parts or all of 21 Pennsylvania counties are eligible for federal disaster relief. The latest on London hostages in a minute.
Among her many assignments, this CBS News correspondent has covered two presidential inaugurations and three White House weddings.
Members of the caucus evidently don't like the idea of the steering committee telling them who should or who shouldn't.
CBS News correspondent Mariah McLaughlin joined CBS News 12 years ago as an associate producer in the election unit. Then she became a reporter on the CBS News night desk in New York for several years. And in 1966, she took up her duties in Washington, covering Nelson Rockefeller's activities during Campaign 68, the 1972 Democratic Convention, and the inaugurations of President Nixon in 69 and 73. She was on hand for the White House weddings of Linda Byrd, Lucy, and Tricia, and traveled umpteen miles on First Lady tours with Mrs. Johnson and Mrs. Nixon. During the many manned space flights, she reported from the astronauts' homes, interviewing their wives and children. CBS News correspondent Mariah McLaughlin, heard regularly over the CBS radio network.
Three gunmen who have been holding hostages inside a restaurant for several hours are making what police call confused and vague demands for various people to be released, but no specific names have been mentioned. The gunmen were apparently robbing the restaurant when police surprised them. The gunmen seized eight hostages, all restaurant staff, and locked them in the basement. No one is reported hurt. The Congressional Black Caucus held its fifth annual fundraising dinner last night in Washington, giving awards of merit to athlete actor Paul Robeson and former heavyweight boxing champion Joe Lewis. Some Democratic presidential hopefuls also attended, Senator Birch Bayh, Congressman Morris Udall, and former vice presidential candidate Sergeant Shriver. Earlier, those three spent the day in Springfield, Massachusetts at a party gathering, as David Culhane reports.
George Wallace undoubtedly would have said there wasn't a dime's worth of difference among the five of them. Five fairly liberal Democrats who appeared at a New England regional conference sponsored by Democratic liberals like the Americans for Democratic Action, the United Auto Workers, and others. More conservative Democrats like Wallace and Senators Henry Jackson and Lloyd Benson declined invitations to appear. But almost 2,000 party leaders and workers heard the kind of attacks on the Ford administration that they dearly love. The men on the firing line, Indiana Senator Birch Bayh, former Oklahoma Senator Fred Harris, former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter, Arizona Representative Morris Udall, and 1972 Vice Presidential candidate Sergeant Shriver. Key issues were the economy, jobs, and tax reform. No vote was taken on preferences. No front runner emerged. Conference sponsors hope a liberal consensus will develop after more meetings, but it is clearly still a horse race. David Culhane, CBS News, Springfield.
More in a minute. Dr. Margaret Mead shares her thoughts on parenthood.
I think it's important not to think of parenthood so much as a profession as to think of it as a vocation, in the sense that it's something that people choose to do. I think today, choosing a full-time professional career might be opposed to choosing parenthood as a vocation, as a whole-time commitment, or as a part-time commitment for the husband and wife, each of whom will also have a career, but not a career that was regarded as something that was more important than the task of parenthood. Because if we turn marriage into profession, I think we'll lose something, because a profession is a partial view of life.
You have the freedom to become the parent you want to become. Make your choices, realizing your God-given potential. This affirmation of parents by the Mennonite churches. President Ford is spending the day at Camp David with his wife, Betty. Mr. Ford says it's regrettable that the OPEC countries raised the price of their oil 10% and that it should signal Congress to get going on a comprehensive energy program. The OPEC hike is expected to raise the price of gasoline here at home about a penny a gallon starting later this week. Gasoline in Israel is going to cost 22% more under a new austerity plan announced by the Israeli government in an effort to reduce Israel's soaring deficit. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
This is KOIN in Portland. We're now leaving the air for equipment maintenance. KOIN normally operates at 970 megahertz with 5,000 watts of power on a 24-hour-a-day basis. We'll return again at 6 a.m. this morning. Now, for the entire staff and management of KOIN, this is A.C. Emmerich inviting you to join us again soon for the best in contemporary radio. Good night. K-O-I-N.